morning and welcome to Texarkana Talks. I'm Zach Ratliff. It's 7:06. Glad to be with you. Glad you're with me. Thank God for another day alive in the greatest country he's ever put on the face of this earth, creating more opportunity than anywhere in the history of the world for me, you, and everyone involved, all of us citizens, and that's key too. Okay, today's Tuesday, June 25th. I've got with me today John Young. John is the author of a book called The End of Innocence, The Assassination of John F. Kennedy. John, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here, Zach.
Hey, thanks for being on with us this morning. I appreciate it. I guess kind of give us a little history, who you are, what you do, where you're from, and how you got into writing a book about the Kennedy assassination.
Well, I'm born and raised in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Grew up and graduated at Alma High School and pretty much been around Fort Smith my whole life. From a very early age, I was fascinated with the assassination. Don't know why, but it's something that I, you know, first started reading about in our encyclopedias. Back then we had encyclopedia books.
Right.
And when I was in, say, middle school, kids were carrying around comic books, and I was carrying around books like, you know, 6 Seconds in Dallas and Rush to Judgment and things like that. I can remember the first time I went to a public library and asked for the librarian to see if she could order a book called Forgive My Grief by Penn Jones Jr., which was a one of the early researchers and early critics of the Warren Commission. And she looked at me kind of funny and was like, who is that? And don't know if I can get it.
But you're right.
So I was just fascinated from an early age. Every book report I done on the Kennedy assassination, I can actually remember my teacher one time telling me, you know, okay, John, this time you cannot do a report over the assassination. It's got to be something else history related. So, but that just kind of grew over the years through my teenage years. And I joined the Air Force and was actually on leave one weekend. I was stationed in Wichita Falls, Texas, and not a lot to do back then in Wichita Falls in the late 80s, and took a trip to Dallas, and that was the first time I actually got to be at Dealey Plaza where the awful event that day happened. That day really changed my life, and I had the honor to look up Penn Jones Jr., who lived in, at that time, Mithelonia, Texas. He was one of my research heroes, and actually drove to his house, had no idea where he lived. Just got into town and asked some people at a local store if they knew him. And they're like, oh, yeah, sure, he's down on a ranch down this road here. And, you know, back then people would do that. They probably wouldn't do that nowadays. But
right.
So drove out, met Penn. My knees were shaking as I was pulling up his driveway. And I thought this guy might, you know, pull out a shotgun and shoot me. But instead, he welcomed me with open arms, you know, told him, you know, he obviously seen that I was a younger researcher that was interested in the assassination. And that day started a great friendship between Penn and I. And over the years, me and him met on many occasions. He shared research material with me, years and years of research that he had done since the event in 63. And that kind of got me started. I joined a research group out of Dallas in the mid-90s and dove headfirst into the research of the assassination like never before. Was able to meet and kind of be mentored by some well-known researchers like Robert Groden, Jim Morris, Jack White, names that might not be familiar to some of your listeners, but these are pioneers of the assassination research community.
Let me ask you this, John, and I think in today's society, you know, there's always been some skepticism around whatever you hear about around the assassination and the narrative that is there. But in today's America, man, everybody's just, you know, coming out of COVID, nobody trusts anything. So I think there's a renewed interest in the assassination. Are you finding that to be true?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, I named the book The End of Innocence, and I believe that was the day that truly America lost its innocence. That was the day where, you know, that's kind of the moment where trust was replaced with the growing skepticism in our government. You know, if you talk to young people today, they're disgusted and kind of turned off by the society in which they live. And I believe that all started on November 22nd, 1963. I tell people all the time, if the Kennedy assassination is not important to you, well, do you know anyone that's ever been affected by Vietnam? Have you ever lost, you know, did you lose a parent, a grandparent, or a relative in Vietnam? Can't hardly talk to anybody that their family wasn't affected in some way by Vietnam.
Right.
The Kennedy assassination should be important to you.
Well, and let me stop you right there. So as I put as I just put out a post last night that you were going to be on and talking about this and a picture of your book, one of my good friends, Amanda Abels, had this to say. She said, the show Mad Men touched on this beautifully. It unraveled the American ideal. Divorce rates skyrocketed. The infancy of en masse therapy was formed, and so much more stemming from this violence. She goes on to say, my mom even noted that it was somehow worse watching Lee Harvey Oswald be assassinated real time directly after by simply turning it to the news. The public was forever changed. And then she's saying by the Kennedy assassination. Would that assertion go with kind of what you believe?
No, exactly. Exactly.
And she's much more well-spoken than I am.
No, very well-spoken. But yeah, you know, it's been 60 years. I'm going on 61 now, then this November. And, you know, just for example, the terrorist attacks in 2001, all the files from that attack has been released to the public now. Almost 61 years later, there are still over 5,000 files, or close to 5,000 files, that we have not been able to see, that's been hidden. Why? You know, the most recent files that came out several years ago, a gentleman by the name of Reuben Efron, who was a CIA operative, and it was in those files, it showed that he was reading Lee Harvey Oswald's mail 20 months before the assassination. 20 months before. Why was files like that hidden from us? Reuben Efron died 30 years ago. So they weren't protecting the person. They were protecting the operational activity that he was engaged in reading and monitoring Lee Oswald 20 months before the assassination. I think some of the reason files are still hidden and we're not able to see them is it's an embarrassment to the CIA that they were monitoring the man who they claim killed the president for 20 months and did nothing to stop the assassination. So I could go on and on about Lee Oswald and my thoughts on him and where he was that day and all that, but.
Well, I tell you what, let's get into that. Well, let's go to break, and then we'll kind of get into some of your thoughts on that and the book and more. It's 7:29, almost 7:30. I'm Zach Ratliff here with John R. Young. He's the author of The End of Innocence, The Assassination of John Kennedy, and we will be back. Welcome back to Texarkana Talks. I'm Zach Ratliff. This is KTFS. It's 7:33 and a half, and I'm glad to be with you. I'm here with John R. Young, author of The Age of Innocence, The Assassination of John F. Kennedy. And, John, you were going into it saying that, you know, your interest in the assassination started at a young age. You did book report after book report on it. Then, you know, you got to meet some pretty influential researchers into this and some pretty knowledgeable people. And then off air, you were telling me that, you know, you've got 35 years of research that have gone into this book.
Yeah, that's correct. I've been researching it since the late 80s. Interviewed dozens and dozens of witnesses, spent so much time in Dallas, in and around Dallas, going through files. I've been kicked out of literally, I don't mean kicked out, but I mean, I would, sunset to sundown, I would be in the municipal archives building and they would say, hey, we're closing time. We got to go. I mean, just digging through files and researching. I can't imagine and I can't add up, the hours I've spent, researching in people's homes, interviewing witnesses. I've got to be good friends with several of those witnesses and they were able to, you know, I was able to build a relationship with them and they were able to trust me and open up to me about what they saw that day. Folks like Ed Hoffman, who saw a shooter on the grassy knoll that day. And so, you know, it's just been a great experience. But it's also been very eye-opening to what happened that day is not what our history books tells us. And the reason I wrote the book was not to bash the government, I love this country, I love living here. And the reason I wrote the book is I wanted the everyday person to be able to pick it up and know and learn a little bit about the assassination that they didn't find in their history books or the encyclopedias. Book is not... Go ahead.
Okay. My dad, he's reading it and enjoying it much, and I'm going to pick it up just as soon as he puts it down. And you just, you know, the stuff he's talking about in this is kind of eye-opening, it seems. And, you know, I've read a few books about the assassination myself. The last one was probably Killing Kennedy by Martin Dugard and O'Reilly. You know, and they kind of carried the company line on that from the CIA. But one thing you said in the last segment was the CIA claims. So I'm just going to kind of give you a segue into the claim as opposed to what you see.
You know, the government story is Lee Oswald fired, you know, three shots from the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository building, and basically after the shooting, left the building and caught a bus, and then went to his rooming house and grabbed a pistol and shot Officer J.D. Tippett, and then was arrested at the Texas Theater about an hour and a half after the assassination. And there are numerous witnesses who saw Lee Harvey Oswald on the first or second floor between 12 o'clock and 12:25. The assassination occurred at 12:30, and there are numerous witnesses that saw him in the lunchroom area. There's one witness who has now come forward that claims she was giving Lee Harvey Oswald change for a Coke when shots were fired. That's another researcher's story, and I won't say too much on that out of respect for him. But it's in his book, Absolute Proof, by Robert Groden. But so kind of plugging his book there. But so even if you don't take into account her story, he was seen by numerous witnesses just minutes before the assassination, and then seen 90 seconds after the assassination in the exact same spot, standing by the Coke machine drinking a Coke by Officer Marion Baker and the superintendent of the building, Roy Truly. Even if Oswald was down on the first or second floor at 12:25, he had to make a mad dash to the sixth floor, do the shooting, come back down and down, you know, five flights of stairs, by the way, past several witnesses who were on the stairs at that time who did not see him, did not hear him. The elevators in the depository were broken that day, not working. So there was only one way up and down, and that was a old wooden staircase. So you would hear someone on the stairs. Sandra Stiles, Victoria Adams were coming down the stairs immediately after the assassination. He would have passed right by them if he was moving from the sixth floor to the first or second floor. They saw and heard no one on the stairs. So, you know, the logic tells you that he was not up there.
Well, and, you know, I've been to the sixth floor museum, and, you know, they have it staged as what they say it looked like. You know, that's a big space. So even just covering that sixth floor to get to the stairs would have been time consuming, I think.
Well, and that day it was covered in books. I mean, the Texas School Book Depository obviously distributed school books, and there was just boxes and boxes and mazes and mazes. I've seen and studied the pictures of what it looked like that day, and it wasn't like, okay, I'm going to shoot the president in the southeast corner, and then I'm going to wipe down the gun, which had no prints on it, and hide the gun, and then stash down five flights of stairs. Just, and the staircase was across the room, and this was a maze of boxes. And what's very interesting is guys below him, supposedly on the fifth floor, a couple of witnesses claims they heard no one above them. They claim they did hear shots, but they heard no one above them. And one of the parts of my book talks about one man's floor is another man's ceiling. And those floors back then were old wooden floors. And if anybody that's ever walked on an old wooden floor, they know how it creaks. They know how noisy it is. They would have heard scurrying above their head. They would have heard, you know, someone, you know, running across the room. They heard nothing, you know. So there are all kinds of things that I could write a book just on Oswald's movements before the assassination and after the assassination. But I go into detail. Pretty good detail in the book. And like I was saying earlier, I wrote the book because I wanted the ordinary person to be able to pick it up and understand it and not be just overwhelmed by all the information. Because you could, in this subject, you could spend an entire book, and books have been written, on, you know, Oswald's movements, the medical evidence, the killing of Officer Tippit, just on and on and on. But I touched on a little bit of everything in the book. I feel like I've done a good job doing that. I also have a weekly podcast that I'm putting out. It's called The End of Innocence, The Assassination of John F. Kennedy. And it's available on all your podcast platforms. So we'd really love for people to give that a try and enjoy that. It's something that I've enjoyed doing. I've been doing it about a year and a half now. Got, I think, 64 episodes in. Most of the podcast came from the book. There's a lot of things that didn't come from the book. Anyway, it's real interesting. I wish people would give it a try also.
Yeah, well, and I can link to that on my Facebook or something. I'll probably download it because I'm interested in this. I've always been interested in this. But, you know, beyond Lee Harvey Oswald and out of the books I've read, you know, he did, and correct me if I'm wrong because I'm no expert like you, but, you know, he did, I've read that he did travel to Russia some and all that. But that's not the only part of the story that seems conflicting when it comes to the assassination narrative that we've been given. There's more outside of Lee Harvey Oswald that happened that day that is concerning as to the narrative we've been given, isn't there?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, President Kennedy did not make a lot of friends in Washington. You know, the CIA, he publicly stated that he was going to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it into the wind. He said that. That's not me, you know,
right,
dreaming that up. He said that. Him and the FBI, him and J. Edgar Hoover did not have a good relationship. Him and Lyndon Johnson did not have a good relationship.
Right.
You know, I think the final nail in John Kennedy's coffin was when he released a National Security Act, NML 263, which was basically pulling us and pulling all American forces out of Vietnam by the end of 1964. Something interesting that very few people know is National Security Action Memo 273 was written before Kennedy was even assassinated. And National Security Action Memo 273 basically reversed Kennedy's policies on Vietnam. And Johnson released it on the 26th of November, 1963, one day after Kennedy's funeral.
So it was already ready.
The body wasn't even, you know, it was still warm. And Johnson totally reversed Kennedy's policies on Vietnam. And we went full-fledged into Vietnam and, you know, lost 168,000 Americans. And so that's what burns in me. I had relatives. I had an uncle that was involved in Vietnam, and I can remember as a kid, I'd go spend summers in Dallas where they lived, and I would hear stories that he would tell. He wouldn't tell a lot of them because some of them were really, and he would tell me, I don't want to share this, but, you know, one he told me was he was sitting around a campfire with some of his buddies, and they were, you know, out in the jungle, and here comes a young Vietnam kid, and he's strapped with explosives, and his best friend jumps on the kid to save the rest of them.
Right.
You know, and you know how that story ended. So, you know, but I believe that what really drove the nail in Kennedy's coffin was his policies on Vietnam. You know, war is big money.
Right.
You know, some people don't understand that. And some of Lyndon Johnson's best friends and closest comrades were military and weapons manufacturers.
Right.
And a lot of them were in and around Texas and going broke before the war.
There you go. Well, let me stop you there, John. Let's go to break, and then we'll come back. We'll have a few minutes on the other side of the break to finish up and then get, you know, let people know how they can get a hold of your book. It's 7:45, almost 7:46 here on KTFS. I'm Zach Ratliff, and we will be back. Welcome back to Texarkana Talks. It's 7:50. I'm Zach Ratliff. This is KTFS. I'm going to let y'all know, sometimes I feel like Ron Burgundy as I clear my throat before we come back. Just a little humor. Anyway, I'm here with John R. Young, author of The Age of Innocence, The Assassination of John F. Kennedy. John, thanks for staying with me through the break.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Zach.
Oh, yeah.
I really have enjoyed it.
Hey, I went in during the break and subscribed to your podcast on Spotify, and it's under the same name, The End of Innocence, The Assassination of John F. Kennedy. So I'll start listening to that today. This is a very interesting subject to most of America, I think. And like I said, as we got going, you know, coming out of COVID with the suspicion of the government, I think at an all-time high, has driven a new, I don't want to say fervor, but definitely a new interest into this assassination. You were just kind of going into how Lyndon Johnson was a proponent of Vietnam, how John F. Kennedy was going to pull us out of Vietnam, how war is a big money, you know, the industrial war machine is huge. And no one knows it any better, whether we realize it or not, than here in Texarkana, as our part of our lifeline of our community is the Red River Army Depot or depot.
Sure.
And so, this town is directly affected by when there's a lapse in needing war material. So, I mean, that absolutely should be understood on this radio show.
Yeah, you know, in writing this book, and I was reminded several times, what is the legacy of President Kennedy? And the fact is, we'll never know. You know, the man himself is probably remembered prominently either as being unfaithful in his marriage or as a victim of an assassination. The term of his presidency will always be remembered, not for what it accomplished, but for what it might have accomplished. You know, and that's one thing that's really heartbreaking. But, I mean, can you imagine what the United States would be today if there had been no decisive, you know, Vietnam War, and with all of its demonstrations, riots, and deaths, and loss of faith in the government? I mean, there may not have been scandals of Watergate and other political assassinations. You know,
right.
All the hundreds of millions of dollars wasted on defense may have been put to good use for caring for the needy and cleaning up our environment and stuff like that. And so, you know, all of that died on November 22nd, 1963. And what's going on today, it was a direct impact of that fateful day in Dallas. So,
hey, and I got a question from a listener. They said, ask him, does he think the former presidents actually know what happened but don't want to release it because of the problems that would be caused as a country? Because like you're saying, everything that stemmed off of that is huge.
Yeah, and, you know, to me, the names of the shooters and the men behind who did the assassination is less important than the reason it happened. You know, Kennedy represented progress. He wanted peace in our time, and some around him didn't. And I do believe that there were those officials in the government that were aware that something was in the works. I could sit here and explain to you why I believe that Lyndon Johnson himself knew that something was in the works. I'm not saying he planned it and orchestrated it by any means. I do touch on that in my book quite a bit. But there is evidence that, you know, I talked to several witnesses that witnessed a fight the night before the assassination between President Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson over who would ride in the motorcade the next day in Dallas. And Johnson was irate that Kennedy wanted Governor Connally, John Connally of Texas, to ride with him.
Which would have been Lyndon Johnson's friend, correct?
Yeah. Johnson and Connally were best buds. Who he wanted to ride with Kennedy was Senator Ralph Yarborough, who he despised. Senator Yarborough and Johnson hated each other. That's public knowledge. That's who he wanted to ride in the car with Kennedy. And, you know, is that proof of anything? I don't know. But I interviewed Secret Service agents who said they had never seen Johnson as irate and act the way he did that night over, you know, who's riding with who. They said he never had cared before, you know, but Dallas was different. And suddenly he was very concerned about his friend John Kennedy riding in the car President John F. Kennedy that next day in Dallas. So there's little things like that. There's other things that lead me to believe that Johnson was aware that something was in the works and possibly could go down. And I could probably write a book just about that. But
Well, and then you said something that I'm sure you said on purpose, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that picked up. You said shooters with an S. There's some thought. Now, don't give your whole book away. I mean, obviously, we want people to buy it and read it and be interested. But, I mean, that's an interesting statement.
There's documented proof in black and white that there were four professional assassins in Dealey Plaza on November 22nd, 1963. Several of them were arrested and let go. That's something that the American public, most American public, have no idea about. But there's documented proof. They didn't hide that. I've seen and got copies of the police reports. I've seen the documents. Why was there professional assassins in Dealey Plaza that day? I mean, professional assassins don't just, I think I'll drive to Dallas and watch the president and wave at him. No.
Yeah, there's no convention for them that we know of.
No, they were there to do a job, okay? And like I said, several of them got arrested and picked up by the Dallas police after the assassination, Jim Braden being one of them, but was turned away and let go. Questioned a little bit, what are you doing here? Oh, okay, all right, and let go. So, I mean, just that alone, and I go into much more detail in the book, but just that fact alone tells me something wasn't right there. And the fact that Lee Harvey Oswald was not where, our history books tells us he was at the time of the shooting also tells me something wasn't right.
Well, and what's interesting about this to me is that history, I was born in 85, so I wasn't around. But history in my lifetime that I can remember, I can see portrayed differently in books already. So why would I doubt that that's been happening throughout time?
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. Like I said, that day to me was the line in the sand. It was where, back in the 60s, people trusted the government. It was a different time then. People probably can't imagine what it was like. And I wasn't born then. I've done enough studying and research and talked to hundreds and hundreds, it's probably thousands of people that were alive then. And it's hard to imagine a time where people actually trusted what their government told them. But they did then.
Hook, line, and sinker believed it.
Yeah, hook, line, and sinker. That's exactly right. No one questioned. When the Warren Commission released its report, 86% of Americans believed that it was totally true.
Wow.
To this day now, about 14% of Americans believe the Warren Commission.
Right. 14%. 14%. That's amazing. All right, John, we're running towards the end of the show. It's about to cut me off. How can people find their book? Find your book, Amazon, and the name of it.
Amazon. It's The End of Innocence, The Assassination of John F. Kennedy. It's also available on my website. That would be www.endofinnocencejfk.com. Would love for people to give it a try. The book is around 500 pages, almost 1,000 pictures. So it's very well done. Very proud of it.
Well, John, thank you for being on. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed the interview. I look forward to reading the book. I'm going to jump in on the podcast. Have a good day. I appreciate you being here. All right, everybody. This is the end of the show. I'm Zach Ratliff. Man, that was interesting. I hope you all enjoyed it. If you missed some of it, you can pick it up on the podcast. Everybody, have a good day.